Thank you, Don. 720 WGN. Ken Smith with you on this Wednesday night. Hope you're having a great Wednesday so far. Taking you into Thursday at 1 a.m. And then Nick DiGilio will be here as usual. Saying hello to my producer, Michael. How you doing, Mike? Good to see you.
Ken, great to see you as well.
We're gonna eat again tonight. No surprise there.
Oh, thank goodness! I was worried for a second.
I know you had a bead of sweat rolling down your brow there.
It was.
Yes. No. Yeah. There's a new cupcake place in town. They're not new, but they're actually opening up a new location in the South Loop. Molly's Cupcakes, and they have dropped off some cupcakes.
I saw these bad boys, and they look very, very tasty.
They look amazing, although it was kind of funny. So there's one of them that is just, it's Instagrammable, right?
Yes.
There's one package that's Instagrammable.
Flawless. Hasn't been touched.
And then there's another one that maybe the delivery person made too fast of a left turn, and all of the cupcakes kind of just like went over to the side.
I see it as just one giant cupcake.
It's just kind of one giant mishmash of cupcake, and there's. But one of my favorite things to do is, you know, the frosting will get on the package, and you take your finger and you lick it off the package, and all that kind of stuff. So we'll have that to do as well today. But there's a lot of stuff going on today's show. Katie Darrell will be joining us from Access TV. You may remember her from the very, very best of the 70s. She also is the host and executive producer of another show called The Top 10 Revealed. And we'll be talking to her about some of the top, and that's a music show. So we'll be talking about some different eras, different genres of the top 10 revealed musically, and that is coming up in just a few minutes. Now, did you watch the Bears game on Sunday?
Most of it.
Okay, then you must not have Dish Network. Because
I do not, you're right.
Fox TV has been removed from Dish Network.
Whoa.
Not only that, as we are just a couple of days away from the Blackhawks opener in Prague that you'll be able to hear right here on 720 WGN. And thank goodness for that, because as of October 1st, NBC Sports Network has been removed
right
from Dish Network.
That's the Hawks, that's the Bulls, that's the Sox.
And that's
too,
the Sox,
yeah.
Yes, exactly. So I want to talk about that. I want to talk about exactly what these blackouts are, why they are happening, and maybe what you can do about it to help prevent it. And then, as you know, that recreational marijuana is going to become legal in the state of Illinois on January 1st of 2020. So we'll have some people here from Dispensary 33 in Chicago, named one of the 10 most beautiful dispensaries in America, by the way.
Nice.
And I've got a lot of questions to ask them about the difference between medical marijuana, recreational marijuana, what you can get, what you can't get, kind of a tutorial on what's going to happen as soon as the calendar changes over to January 1st, 2020, and marijuana recreationally becomes legal here in the state of Illinois. And of course, there's a lot of talk right now about the vaping controversy and the vaping deaths and the health issues with vaping. So I want to talk to them about what is fact and what is fiction in regards to that.
I was just thinking, I mean, up until probably maybe 2 months, probably a month ago, even maybe even more recently, if you were to ask somebody, you know, for when it does become legal January 1st, you know, what's the enthusiasm going to be like? I would be willing to bet that it's just kind of tempered because so many more people were still vaping. But now with the current, you know, with the news, with the deaths, with the revelations of, you know, cyanide in those tainted capsules, I think that there's going to be probably a lot more people interested in what is going to be available to them on January 1st.
Well, and I also, you know, I've talked to people about what their thoughts, and I'm going to want to hear what Dispensary 33 has to say about it, their thoughts about it, whether or not these tainted vaping products are coming from a legal source or coming from a street source.
Right. It's so far, it's, I mean, you know, there have been, I don't think, any confirmed legal distributors
right.
who they've been able to tie that to.
Right.
From what I've read, it's all, you know, knockoff stuff where that particular, where the cyanide was present.
Well, I'm gonna talk to them about that because I'm very interested in that.
Yeah.
And
oh,
then
yeah.
You've been talking, Don, all evening about the Marnie Yang case.
Oh, yeah.
That
yeah.
has kind of come back into the news after a 10-year absence. Marnie Yang is in jail for a life sentence for the murder of former Chicago Bear Sean Gayle's, air quotes, girlfriend. She was carrying, air quotes, his child. And now her family has come out and said she didn't do it. She was kind of coerced into admitting that she did it.
Mm-hmm.
The lead investigator for the Yang family in that case is going to be joining us a little bit later.
That is fascinating. That that petition today, they're seeking a whole new trial in that.
And I have to admit, I had forgotten all about it.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
I had forgotten all about that whole trial, but boy, has it come back in a big way. Today. And then also, as if you stepped outside for just 5 seconds today, yes, it is October. The summer is over. It is fall in Chicago. And that means Halloween is right around the corner. I already have my Halloween candy purchased.
Nice.
And but it's also, and my wife loves these things. They loves haunted houses. Loves, loves, loves haunted houses. Wants me to go with her to haunted houses every fall. And I go, no, you go with your girlfriends. You have a good time. You go, no, I don't want to weigh you down. You go, you know. The 13th floor haunted house, a premier haunted house in the Chicago area. They're in Melrose Park. They are going to be stopping by in just a little bit. And they're already open. They've been open since September. So it's haunted house season already. So we'll talk about that. But before I get to that, very quickly, Michael, last time we spoke, we were talking about Long John Silver's. Remember that?
I do remember that.
And somebody called up and said that you could go to Long John Silver's and just order that crispy stuff that they put in the bottom of the, they put like, they kind of like line your basket with it.
With like batter, the batter.
Yes.
Yeah. We had a lot of batter calls that night. I remember that.
Yes. You can mm-hmm. just get batter. So I went to Long John Silver's.
You did not.
I went to Long John Silver's and I ordered some food. I had a coupon. You'd be proud of me.
Mm-hmm.
I ordered some food, went to Long John Silver's. And then she's bringing me my food back, and I say to her, is it possible to just to get maybe, like, some of those crispy things that you put on the basket? And she's like, huh? I don't know what you're talking about. And I go, oh. Well, it's like, okay, like, in the basket, you have, like, those crispy things.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, oh, you want a box of crumbs?
No way.
And I'm like, yes, please.
That's horrible.
Yeah. Listen to this.
You actually have...
What is this?
You have is that a bag of crumbs?
Name that sound. I brought them in.
Man.
This was a box of crumbs from Long John Silver's.
They really let you buy the box of crumbs.
No, for free. They were free.
Oh, my
she
God.
She just went over to where the fish was, got like a little scoop, grabbed a bunch of crumbs, mm-hmm. put them in a box, put them in my bag. Here you go. I'm like, thank you.
Wow.
Wait, when you asked this question, what was the look on her face? Does this happen a lot? Did she say?
It didn't look like it happened a lot, but at the same time, it didn't look like she was fazed by it.
You cracked the code.
She's probably heard worse or had more weirder requests than that, but It shocked me.
I just like that she, if there were other people in that restaurant, she just had to be out loud about it. Like, you want a box of crumbs? Like, you could throw out the fancy name.
That was the risk I was taking. That was the risk I was taking, but being called out that I wanted a box of crumbs. Well, she's the one. I said, can I get the crispy things at the bottom?
And
she went, oh, you want a box of crumbs?
That's the real cost of it. It wasn't just free. It was, you had to endure that.
It would have been better if you were like, excuse me, I have a crumb coupon that I want to use.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was just excited that I didn't have to pay for them. I was ready to pay for them and everything. She just gave me the box of crumbs, and they're delicious.
Of course.
And tip, if you have an air fryer at home, oh man, it's like it just came out of the bottom of the fryer.
Man,
it's like a gourmet chef.
Warm them up for a couple of minutes, and who needs potato chips?
Yeah.
Who needs combos? Who needs any of that snacking stuff? You could be watching the Bears game this weekend, munching on a box of crumbs from Long John Silver's. Just a tip from Uncle Ken to you, to all of my friends listening right now.
That you might have just exploded the mind of that one caller who was asking about it, because you hear about secret menus from Starbucks and McDonald's and everything, and you just crack the code on the secret menu from Long John Silver's.
Yes, none of their secret menus have a free item on them.
Mm-mm. No, that's true, and it's delicious. It was actually better than the fish.
Wow.
Really?
You have to go back there and let this lady know that. You're like, yeah, I do want the crumbs. They're better than your fish.
The crumbs are great, and the hush puppies warm up really well in the air fryer, too. So
this is the best day ever.
Good. Yeah.
Do you think we could sprinkle them on the cupcakes?
Let's do it. We'll have crumbs and cupcakes. We'll have I'll try it if you try it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Is that a crumpet? Is that what crumpets are?
That would be a crumpet.
Yes.
You get a point.
I get it.
Absolutely. You get a point. So Katie Darrell from Access TV in the top 10 revealed, going to join us in just a minute. Ken Smith with you. This is 720 WGN. 720 WGN. And the engineer just ran in here during the break, and he goes, Long John Silver's crumbs are great, but you know what's better than Long John Silver's crumbs? Popeye's crumbs. It blows them away. Popeye's crumbs. You can get Popeye's crumbs as well, apparently.
Wow. Well, Adam, he is our resident food expert.
Yes. Well, I told you, engineers will eat anything. They will eat anything. Want to go to the phone right now. I'm so happy that this guest was able to come back on. She is the host of the very, very best of the 70s on Access TV. And she is also the host of the Top 10 Revealed Sundays on Access TV. And we welcome back to WGN the lovely Katie Darrell. How you doing, Katie?
I'm doing great, you guys. How are you?
Outstanding. Outstanding. Do you have Long John Silver's out there in L.A.? Do you eat crumbs?
I do not eat crumbs, okay? I don't. I have to admit, I've never eaten at a Long John's, and I've never eaten at a Popeye's. Like, what? Oh. Like, I don't know how I've gotten this far in my life, but, like, now it's one of those things where it's kind of like, it's more exciting for me to tell people I've not had it versus actually having it.
We may have to end this conversation. Although there are lots of fast food restaurants out there. Like, we don't have a Jack in the Box out here. We don't have a Fat Burger out here. We don't have an In-N-Out.
Yeah.
I think
do you guys have Whataburger? Because we don't have Whataburger, but I used to live in Texas, and that was my jam.
Whataburger? What is it called?
It's actually called, like, Whataburger.
Whataburger.
Like,
Whataburger.
Whataburger.
I think there are some Whataburgers in the suburbs. I could be wrong.
Their breakfast taquitos are so good, man.
The breakfast
taquitos are to die for. I mean, the best, like, drunk food ever.
Well, that's, like, a huge thing in Texas. Like, when I go to Austin, like, it's all, like, breakfast burritos and breakfast taquitos and breakfast tacos. I love that stuff. I can eat that stuff all day long.
Yes. I mean, listen, it was a game changer when McDonald's started serving its breakfast all day long. So, like, when it's, like, been, like, a taco breakfast type thing that's all day long, I'm like, this is amazing.
Well, I'd love to talk to you about breakfast tacos and crumbs all night long, Katie, but I wanted to talk to you about one of your shows on Access TV, which is called The Top 10 Revealed. And explain to our audience what the top 10 revealed is.
Yeah. So the top 10 revealed, it basically puts the spotlight on songs, bands, and musicians that have really kicked butt over the years. So each week we have these music icons and experts come in, and they talk about how these 10 songs have ranked on a list. And some of the lists are like top 10 70s breakup songs, or top 10 double studio albums, or top 10 guitar gods we've lost, or top 10 drug songs. And so this season we're doing live albums and ghoulish songs for Halloween and songs about America for Thanksgiving and rocking Christmas songs at Christmas time, and British Invasion bands was this past Sunday. So each week it's a different list, counting down 10 songs with cool experts like Lita Ford, Sebastian Bach, the late Eddie Money was a great expert on our show, you know, Steven Adler, Dee Snider, so many great rock and rollers.
They are great, and Eddie is a fantastic guy. The last 3 weeks have been just kind of brutal. But yes,
yeah,
well,
yeah,
I want to talk about your last couple of shows, which was epic songs from 1975.
Yes. So and let me clarify this, okay?
Yes,
so we're counting down this list.
Yeah.
Epic songs of 1975. Okay, it can be a little tricky because someone might be like, wait a minute, that came out in December of 74. Yeah, man, but it charted in January of 75, so stop being a jerk and just enjoy the show, all right? Like, don't email me that junk. I don't want to hear it.
It sounds like you've had a lot of people getting on you, nitpicking about
when
a song came out. All right, so
exactly.
Without further ado, Mike, play the number 10 epic song from 1975. Currently going through a bout of gallstones, or not gallstones.
Was it kidney stones?
Kidney stones, even worse.
Okay.
Even worse. Gene Simmons and Kiss, Rock and Roll All Night. And then at number 9, Fame by David Bowie. What's an epic song?
Well, so here's what's really fun. So these songs, okay, so people get to vote on this. So we actually put these questions up on our social media page. You can go to the Access TV Facebook and Twitter page, and you'll see questions every once in a while that pop up that say, hey, what's your favorite epic song from 1975? And people get to write in their answers, and we literally read these and curate the list. We look at Billboard charts, we look at what the fans say, and we come up with the 10 songs. And what's really great is we're not just celebrating the song, but we're also kind of celebrating the story behind the song, because there's so many cool facts that you'll find out when you really dig into these tracks. Like Fame by Bowie, for instance. A lot of people don't know this, but John Lennon is singing backup on that song. Are you kidding me? Lennon and Bowie in the studio together singing about Fame. Why don't people talk about this all the time?
I've never heard that. Wow.
Yeah, he's doing like those high parts. Fame.
Wow. Okay. See, now that helps me, because there's a lot of backstory here to some of these songs. So
yes, absolutely, and that's what we're diving into. We're celebrating the music, the artist, but also giving you some cool, as I call it, water cooler chit chat. The stuff that you're going to come back to work with and tell like your cubicle mate, or when you're, you know, trapped in an elevator and the song comes on, you like turn to the stranger and you're like, hey, by the way, did you know John Lennon singing on this song? Like, and it's just fun, like, facts to have in your brain.
Sure. Okay. So we've got Rock and Roll All Night, Fame, number 8. Every time I'm at the bar and I go to the Touch Tunes, I play this every time.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Great fan.
Well, it's kind of an epic. It's kind of a song you want to get on a chair and sing. I mean, this does feel like an epic song to me.
And so then if you love Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen, which was number 8 on our list of top 10 epic songs of 35, you would probably be interested to know that the Muppets covered that song, and they used a character called Bruce String Bean, and they sang Born to Add. So there's a nugget there.
Did not know that, and have never played that on the Touch Tunes at the bar.
Now you can.
Number 7 is Long Way to the Top by AC/DC. Number 6, Feel Like Making Love by Bad Company.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about that one.
Oh, baby. When I think about you, come on. It starts out slow, and then it, like, rocks out in the middle, and you're like, oh, this guy's, like, singing about making love.
Well, that is true. He is singing about making love. Number five, Sweet Emotion and Walk This Way by Aerosmith. Epic.
Yeah.
Number four, another one I have a little problem with, and that's One of These Nights by the Eagles. Katie, I'm gonna hold your comment on that for a second, and then we're going to break for news, come back, and do the top three epic songs of 1975, and also talk about the top songs of the British invasion with Katie Darrell from the Top 10 Revealed on Access TV. This is 720. 720 WGN. Thank you, Don. Ken Smith with you until 1 a.m., and that's when Nick DiGilio comes over here to the Skyline Studio at WGN and entertains you for the rest of the evening. Right now with us from Access TV is Katie Darrell. She hosts the Top 10 Revealed, which airs Sunday nights on Access TV. And we're right now in the middle of the Top 10 Epic Songs from 1975. In case you missed it, number 10 to number 4, Rock and Roll All Night by Kiss, Fame by Bowie, Born to Run by Springsteen, Long Way to the Top by AC/DC, Feel Like Making Love by Bad Company, Sweet Emotion by Aerosmith, along with Walk This Way, One of These Nights by the Eagles. I have a little bit of a problem. How is that song so epic, Katie?
You know, A, again, this does come down to the fans voting. And so, I mean, people apparently love the Eagles, or at least the people that are watching our network and voting. And so it rated really high on our voting list. So that was the first thing to talk about. Number two, I believe it came in pretty high on the Billboard charts. I don't have the list right in front of me, so I can't tell you exactly where it came in on Billboard, but it was definitely significant. But then it was also important just because it was the Eagles actually trying to be a little bit more experimental with their sound and get a little bit away from that country twang that they typically had.
Okay.
And almost some people would say they tried to dabble in disco, although we actually did have Don Felder himself talk about this song, and he's like, this is definitely not disco, but I think a lot of rockers are afraid of that word to begin with. So even if it was experimental, I don't think they were going to admit it anyways.
Well, when I think epic, I don't necessarily think the Eagles, but, you know, if the fans pick it or the fans have a lot to do.
Maybe you're still waiting for One of These Nights. Maybe you just don't know.
That's exactly right, Katie. That's exactly right. All right, number three, making their... I wondered when they were going to make their appearance on this list. The number three epic song of 1975.
How I wish you were here.
I mean, isn't every song by Pink Floyd epic?
It really is. And that's what's actually funny that you bring that up. So we've been doing these epic lists, you know, of a different year. So we've done epic songs of 1974, epic songs of 1973, epic songs of 1972. And when you start looking at these lists, some of these bands, you're like, well, it's like the same band that was on the year before, but like that's when they were rocking and rolling. So, yeah, Pink Floyd makes the list a lot. People love that stuff. You know, Zeppelin makes the list a lot. You know, AC/DC is a fan favorite of Access TV voters, and then obviously the Billboard charts in the 70s. So a lot of those you will see on the list, but, yeah. I mean,
well, you mentioned Led Zeppelin. Without any further ado, number two. No, this is not the Diddy version. This is the original. Cashmere by Led Zeppelin, and yes, it is epic. And again, you could put Zeppelin and Pink Floyd in the same boat. Every song is epic. Every single song of theirs is epic.
I agree. They're just these bands that actually I feel like we should do a list that's like top 10 just epic bands.
Yeah, well, that, right, there you go.
There'll be a lot of pushback because there are, you know, we've gotten a lot of these good classic rockers at, you know, I mean, there's so much fantastic music.
Now, I wonder, and we're going to reveal the number one epic song from 1975, and I wonder if this poll had been taken a couple of years earlier, if this song would have come in at number one. But certainly, all of the press that surrounding this song that has gotten in the last 18 months, it's no surprise that this is the number one epic song of 1975. So you think you- There's nothing hotter right now than Queen and nothing hotter than Bohemian Rhapsody. Do you think that this would have been the number one song if you've taken this poll three or four years ago?
I agree with you 100%. I think this definitely ranked so high on the list because people had just seen the music. It was so hot. I think you were hitting the nail right on the head with that assessment. Absolutely.
So that's one of the episodes that you've had on the Top 10 Revealed. The latest episode that you had was the top British invasion bands. Now, the first thing I thought of was, okay, top 10 British invasion bands. We're actually going number 3 to number 10 because number 1, 2, and 3 are pretty much locked down. I assume
locked and loaded.
It's the Beatles, the Stones, and the Who, I'm assuming, right?
Absolutely. Beatles number 1, Stones number 2, The Who number 3. And it was almost debatable. It was kind of neck and neck with the number 2, number 3, but the Beatles by a landslide took the number 1 when we looked at the votes.
But the other bands,
my parents definitely raised me on British invasion bands and classic rock bands. I really enjoyed producing and editing these episodes. It was just so fun watching the footage, and the songs just are so catchy, and you just see where, you know, the roots of so many bands come from and the inspiration that they drew from these British invasion bands. And thank God they flew across the pond and brought us the music that they did. And what's interesting is so many of these British invasion bands, especially people reference the Stones particularly, you know, they were stealing our blues music and those influences and making it better, or making it more mainstream.
It's
a great thing. It's a great thing for the blues rock of America that the British invasion bands came in and came over here, because I think it really now allowed us to shine and highlight those stars as well.
I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, the Stones were coming here to Chicago to record at Chess Records down the street. There was a huge influence on if you ever listen to interviews with McCartney and Lennon and any of those, that's what they all listen to. So I thought, okay, the top 10 British invasion bands, Beatles, Stones, and the Who would be at number 4? Your pick for number 4 was my pick for number 4. I don't think the Kinks get enough credit. They're kind of a forgotten band, especially
because they are underrated.
They're the number 4 British invasion band behind the Beatles, the Stones, and the Who, yet they're underrated.
I think it took almost this list for people to have to rack their brain and start writing things down. But I mean, I think so many people, you know, are drawn to mentioning things like the Animals or, you know, the Zombies, and they forget to say the Kinks sometimes.
Sure. And I think, and once you get to after those top 4, I think that you could almost throw any band anywhere. At number 5, you've got the Zombies.
Yeah.
At number 4.
They were just inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year, by the way.
They were just inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year. Number 4, you've got, I want to play a little bit of this, the Animals.
Number 6.
At number 6, yes. A house in New Orleans. And this is not an original song. It's an old song. And the rumor is that they did it in one take and they were in the studio for 10 minutes.
That's the story.
Which is incredible for one of the greatest songs ever recorded.
I mean, and it has so much like grit to it. Like, you listen to this song, you're like, oh, this is good. Like, I want to vibe with this song. Like, there's so much soul and emotion in the singing.
I want to vibe with this song. You're right. All right, coming in at number 7 is the Yardbirds. At number eight, Herman's Hermits.
Yes.
Herman's Hermits. Like, I'm into something good. Herman's Hermits.
Yeah, and were they, I'm Henry VIII.
Yes, that's even weirder. Yes, you're right.
Yes, so bizarre.
The Dave Clark Five at number 9, and rounding out the top 10 of the British Invasion bands is the Hollies. Now, my question for you, and I only have a little bit of time left, is where's the Moody Blues?
You should have been voting, man. That's why I tell anyone who says, where's my song or where's my band on the list? So you got to log on and vote, man. That's where it is.
Where's the Spencer Davis group?
I'm alone with you.
Where's Steve Winwood, the Spencer Davis group? He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 3 times.
I know, but it's not just based on that.
Well,
it's also
true.
Based on the fan vote. So
that's
a good thing. That's why I can never get in trouble with this one, is because it's not like this is just me picking the list. It depends on interaction with the fans. So I get to blame you, man. It's your fault. But
blame me. It's my fault. I'll take all the blame.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you have at the end of the month, you have a Halloween episode coming up.
Oh.
So what exactly is that going to, it's not going to just be Monster Mash, is it?
It's not just going to be Monster Mash.
Okay.
This one's really fun because, again, you know, we got to remember, we're not just playing the songs. We're talking to the stars about the songs. And by doing that, we're also talking about the Halloween, you know, time of the year. So getting to hear, you know, Dee Snider talk about dressing up for Halloween with his kids, like, and hearing these intimate stories is just really fun. And hearing, like, Randy Jackson is on our panel this year, and him talking about Halloween songs and, you know, working with people like Michael Jackson. And what Michael Jackson song maybe would be on this list? Guys, huh?
Yeah, right, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, you know, spoiler alert, you know, we have Alice Cooper makes this list, and then you know, other things, you know, it's not just about a song that maybe references a zombie, but like, are there songs out there that use, you know, talk about witches or werewolves?
There you go.
So this list goes to kind of a fun, funky place of if you were about to throw a Halloween party tonight and you wanted to have
a playlist,
kind of spooky infused playlist, what would you have on it? And of course, you got to have Werewolves of London. You got to have the Monster Mash, even though you kind of hate it, but then you kind of like it.
Yeah, the Monster Mash is the Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer of Halloween.
Yeah, but it's become the ugly sweater song of Christmas, right?
Right,
it's like the ugly ugly jack-o'-lantern song of Halloween. Like, you can't get through the season without hearing it, and then you go, oh, thank God, I don't have to hear it again for another year.
But, you know, you got me thinking, though, how would you like to have Dee Snider as your dad, and he's dressing up for Halloween to take you around trick-or-treating?
And he loves Halloween. Seriously, is like Halloween is the second favorite holiday in the Snyder household, number one being Christmas. But he said, like, they go all out for Halloween.
And you mentioned Alice Cooper. And by the way, Alice Cooper still puts on an amazing show. He's touring a couple of different ways right now. He's touring with the Hollywood Vampires, and he's touring on his own. But he still puts on a great show, and he is the nicest, kindest, most gentle man you've ever met.
And a fantastic golfer. I grew up in Arizona, and I'm telling you, like, I grew up golfing as well, so I ran into that guy out in the links many a time.
I ran into him at the airport in Vegas, and I said, you still got that deal with Callaway? Can you maybe hook me up with some clubs? Katie Darrell, she is the host of the Top 10 Revealed on Access TV Sunday nights, and also the very, very best of the 70s on Access TV. Thank you so much for spending some of your Wednesday night with us. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hope you guys tune in and enjoy every episode. Talk to you later.
Thank you, Katie. Katie Darrell from Access TV. I pretty much agreed with most of that list. You're a little bit younger than I am, Michael. Did you, as Katie was saying, did you vibe on most of that list right there?
You know, I think I could roll with it. Some of the songs from the British Invasion, I had a little bit of, you know, I don't know if I'd go with Herman Hermits and the I'd go a little bit more research as far as that goes. But the epic songs of 1975, you're dead on with the fact that it has to do with culture right now. Because I think a few years ago when those commercials were rolling with Led Zeppelin, they would have been near the top. And I don't know.
Sure, yeah, Bohemian Rhapsody definitely is what's hot right now, or certainly what was hot when they did this polling.
Absolutely,
you know, and it rode the wave. I asked you a little bit earlier if you had watched the Bears game on Sunday, and you said yes. And I said, well, if you did, then that means you don't have Dish Network. Do you know that there are a lot of people in Chicago right now, and not just in Chicago, across the country, who cannot get Fox television on their TV stations? Why is that? I'll talk about it in just a minute. Ken Smith with you. This is 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Ken Smith with you until 1 a.m. Thanks for joining us tonight. And I have to admit, I've been a little ticked off for the last week or so. Like so many of you, I have satellite. I have Dish Network. Some of you may have Xfinity. Some of you may have DirecTV. Some of you may have cut the cord and you're just doing Hulu or something of that nature. So it's very possible that there's a few of you out there who have absolutely no idea of what I'm about to talk about. But if you have Dish Network, and I've had Dish Network for a very long time, and I probably could have switched out of it many years ago, but it's just kind of a hassle, so I stick with it. What ends up happening is they end up having to pay sometimes for stations that you can get for free, like your local channels. The satellite and cable companies still have to pay for those channels. And then in turn, you are paying for them. You probably have a local channels package on your satellite and cable. Well, 3-4 days before the first Bears game was supposed to air on Fox 32, Fox 32 all of a sudden is gone from my Dish Network. Fox 32 is gone. Channel 50 is gone because they own Channel 50. Fox Sports 1 is gone. Fox Sports 2 is gone. The Big Ten Network is gone. All Fox stations, with the exception of the Fox News Channel stations, because they're under a different agreement, but all of the Fox stations are gone from Dish Network. So, no Bears, no baseball playoffs for the games that are on Fox, because some of those games are not only just on Fox regular, they're also on Fox Sports 1. No Thursday night football, unless you have NFL Network. Those games are on Fox. Can't watch those. You're a wrestling fan? WWE SmackDown moves to Fox this week. It was on USA for 15 years. It moves to Fox this week. No, The Rock is coming back. Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Ric Flair, they're all coming to SmackDown this week. No SmackDown, no Fox, no Masked Singer. I know, Mike, you're probably a huge fan of the Masked Singer.
I'm very upset I can't see Donny Osmond this week.
That's exactly right. T-Pain. T-Pain won the whole thing last year. Not that I watched. I just watched the last 2 minutes of it to see who takes off the mask. That's the only thing I watch, by the way.
That's crazy, because are they planning it out to where they know which shows people are going to want to watch before they hit these blackouts?
Well, that's exactly right. So, I mean, and let's not forget about Family Guy and The Simpsons and Empire and shows like that. But that's exactly how they do it. They plan it out during a time where they think it's going to be most inconvenient for the viewer.
All the appointment watching is flushed down the drain.
So you've got basically all of your fall premieres that are happening now, last week and this week. Yeah, you've got the NFL. Most of your Bears games, although they're playing so many national games this year, like the Vikings game was the only... So far, that only was the only Fox game so far. But I think that this next game in London, I think, is supposed to be on Fox. But even if it's not, you're still missing the NFL on Fox. You're not getting it. You're not getting Thursday Night Football. You're not going to get SmackDown. You're not getting all those premieres. And it depends what it depends what cable, what satellite system you have. You may not be affected.
Now, with this, do you think that this is just showcasing the end of TV, the era that we've lived in for so many years, and since everyone is moving to streaming and everything, and they're just, this is their last ditch effort to find any kind of income or payment from their subscribers at the moment? Because it seems like an evil genius is behind this plan.
is this just the beginning? What used to happen, and like I said, I've had Dish Network for, I've had it for probably over 20 years, and they would have these, you know, you'd be watching it and something would scroll across the screen that says, you are going to lose this station as of October 1st. Please call your local station or whatever and tell them you don't want. And it always got resolved. It always got resolved.
Yeah, they used to say if you wanted to get MTV to call in and make sure your cable provider would get it.
There you go. Yeah. So now there we go. I've hit a chord. So it's happened. You've seen that happen.
Many times.
Right. So when things started to change was last year. Would it shock you if I told you the Dish Network has not had HBO for almost a year?
Yes, it would. Isn't HBO like synonymous with being on the Dish Network?
Okay, there's no reason to have cable or satellite unless you have HBO. There really isn't. That's why you have it, to get HBO. And I told my wife, I'm like, you know, there's no HBO. And she goes, well, if there's no HBO by the time Game of Thrones comes on, then we're going to dump Dish Network. And we waited a month, 2 months, 3 months, no HBO. I finally ended up just ordering HBO through Hulu and streaming it. Now, Dish Network is not charging me for HBO. So the money that I'm not paying them is just now going to Hulu. But my wife called Dish Network last week because I want to get the NFL Red Zone. NFL Red Zone is a Sunday package where they just basically flip around to different games, flip, show teams in the red zone, show scoring drives, things of that nature. It's great if you've got fantasy teams, which I don't even want to get into my fantasy. I mean, I've got Drew Brees, Antonio Brown, Melvin Gordon. It's been a nightmare so far this year. Anyway.
Sorry.
So they tell her, yeah, we're not getting HBO back because HBO is owned by TNT, is owned by AT&T. And AT&T owns DirecTV. So they purposely pulled it off of Dish Network just so it could be exclusive to DirecTV. I'll talk more about it in just a second. It's just about time for the news. Thank you, Vic. 720 WGN. Well, video hopefully hasn't killed the radio star just yet. Hanging on by a thread, but it certainly is. Video certainly affecting the way we watch TV. I was talking about how if you have Dish Network, you can't get Fox. You can't get Fox Local. You can't get Fox National. As a matter of fact, this blackout affects stations in 17 markets across 23 states and the District of Columbia. You can't get Fox, normal Fox. You can't get Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports 2, the Big Ten Network, Fox Soccer Plus, and Fox Deportes. So you're missing your college football. You're missing your NFL football. You're missing all your premieres. Like I said, you know, you're missing the Masked Singer, and you're missing all these other different things. No Major League Baseball playoffs. No Bears game on Sunday. No WWE SmackDown. And you would ask Mike, well, it sounds like that if they're evil geniuses, they plan this stuff out.
Yeah,
that's exactly what they do. Well, what about if you cut the cord? You go, okay, well, you know what? I've got a bunch of friends who cut the cord. Dish owns Sling. You've seen those commercials for Sling? That's a streaming service where you cut the cord and you just, and it's cheaper than having cable or satellite. And so you just get your package through there and you stream everything. Guess what? If you have Sling, you don't have Fox. You can't watch any of the local Fox programming. You can't watch Channel 50. Fox and Dish, they've been operating under an extension of their previous deal. And of course, both sides point the finger at each other for the problem. Dish is claiming that Fox is demanding a double-digit percentage rate increase, and they're trying to force Dish to bundle its cable networks with its stations. If you turn on a Fox station when you have Dish Network, you'll get a Dish Network spokesperson, and they go, I'm so-and-so, the CEO of Dish Network. I'm so sorry that you're seeing me instead of your normal Fox programming. But Fox has chosen to remove their programming from Dish Network. They want to raise their prices by double digits and pass that along to you. And we're fighting to keep our rates down and blah, blah, blah. And if you Google Fox or look up any Fox statements, they're saying the exact same thing about Dish Network. They're saying, oh, we want to be on. But it's Dish Network that doesn't want to comply and doesn't want to be with anything. Please, if you've got any thoughts on this, because if you have Dish Network, I'm sure that you're as ticked off as I am. Call me, shoot me a text, 312-981-7200. 847 says, how would I pay extra to have cable with no Fox anything channels? How can I do that? That's a great question. I'm sure you're like me at the end of every month, you get that bill that's not getting any smaller and going, wait a minute. I don't have Fox. In my case, I don't have HBO. Margaret says, Dish Network always has trouble, so why buy it? Is there something in your contract to prevent you from doing it? She's in Bridgeport. I mean, there's nothing. I can switch to another network. The biggest problem I have is that I also have a external hard drive that attaches to my DVR, where I have moved a lot of shows and a lot of programs. You know, I've got the 2016 World Series, and I've got the 2010 and 2013 and 2015 Stanley Cup championships in their entirety that I recorded, moved onto that external hard drive. If I move from Dish Network to DirecTV or Xfinity or something like that, then I won't be able to access any of those shows that I've been archiving over the last how many years. So that's probably that's part of the problem. And 773 says, if you put an antenna on your TV, you can get the channels that you're talking about for free. That's absolutely correct as far as local channels. You don't have to pay money to go through your cable or satellite to get a local channel, to get your 2, 5, 7, 9, 11, 26, 20, 32, hut. You don't have to do any of that. But, for example, I was at an event on Sunday where I wasn't going to be home to watch the Bears game. And what I normally would have done was recorded that Bears game and watched it when I got home and just skipped through the in-between plays and the commercials and watched the entire game in about an hour and 15 minutes. I can't record it if I'm going through an antenna. I have a couple of TVs in the house that are just hooked up to antennas, but that's not going to help me with Fox Sports 1. That's not going to help me with Fox Sports 2. That's not going to help me with the Big Ten Network. It will help me get local Fox stations, but it's still not going to help me get any of those cable satellite Fox stations.
You know, I think what they're doing, it's just pushing it, making it so much easier to make that decision to move to these streaming services. I mean, with Disney, I think NBC's using the Peacock network now. It's just making it so much easier to be like, all right, well then, if you're going to keep charging me and screwing around with me, then I'm going to just switch over to Netflix and call it a day.
But then again, like I said, you've got Sling. If you have Sling, then you're still out of luck because Dish Network owns Sling. So if it's not on Dish Network, it's not on Sling. Yes, there is Hulu. There is YouTube TV. I have friends who watch TV through their PlayStations. You can stream through the PlayStations. But how soon before it's affecting all of those as well?
That's a good point.
The point I'm trying to make is I think it's coming for you, too. Now, here's the extra kick in the gut. As of October 1st, NBC Sports Chicago is no longer on Dish Network. They're in a blackout dispute as well.
Wow.
Now, Sox season just ended. Cubs season just ended unceremoniously. But the Cubs will have their own broadcast network next year. The only place where you will be able to see the Sox, the Bulls, and the Blackhawks is on NBC Sports Chicago. You've got the Blackhawks home opener, or not home opener, but you got the Blackhawks season opener in Prague in a couple of days that you'll be able to hear right here on 720 WGN. And thank goodness for that, because I may not be able to watch the game. How long is it going to take for that dispute to get settled? How many Blackhawks games am I going to miss? Are they going to get it settled before the Bulls season starts? They're going to start playing preseason games soon, and who cares about that? But they're going to, the regular season's going to start up soon.
This is all the more reason to just switch everything to radio.
Well, that's exactly right. Just get
WGN 24/7.
That's right. Just the transistor radio. Absolutely. 630 says, I feel all sporting events will soon become previous. Each of the broadcast networks are already trying to come up with their own streaming platforms, Disney, CBS, NBC, just like you were saying. And again, it's how soon before it's coming for you? How soon before this problem hits all the major streaming networks and you can't avoid it? They're holding us over a barrel is what they're doing. Well, what can you do to fight back? Well, they say, pressure your stations, pressure your local stations. They'll all say, call this number, call that number.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is, if it's not done in bulk, if there's not an outrage, nothing's going to change. I thought the HBO thing was going to get resolved. I said, there's no way that Dish Network doesn't have HBO by the time the Game of Thrones premiere comes on. There's no way.
You got to make those moves. That's what people want to watch.
That's the only, right, exactly.
It's the only reason.
Didn't happen. But then when I realized AT&T owns DirecTV, then it kind of made sense. But even if you own DirecTV, you're AT&T, you own DirecTV, so you want HBO on DirecTV. Fine. Why would you have 40% of your customers blacked out on another network? Now, maybe they figured, maybe I'm the dummy. And I'm sure the people are going to text at 312-981-7200 and go, yes, you are the dummy. But maybe I'm the dummy because they figured, well, they're just going to get HBO through HBO Go or HBO Now, which is their, kind of app streaming services. Are they going to do it through Hulu or Netflix or whatever? And they're still going to get the money because they own HBO.
Oh, man. The more layers you add to this, the more diabolical it sounds, actually. Jeez.
It is diabolical. I wonder where it's going from here. It certainly has gotten worse in the last several years. And it doesn't seem like it's going to get any better. In the meantime, I just want, you talked about MTV, right? Mm-hmm. I want my MTV.
Yeah, that was a big yeah. campaign.
I just want my NBC Sports Chicago so I can watch the Hawks and the Bulls this winter and this fall. And I just want my Fox so I can watch the Bears and I can watch the Simpsons and Family Guy and Big Ten Network and things. That's all I want. I want this to get resolved, mm-hmm. and I want it to get resolved soon. What's it going to take for me to switch over? Maybe finally, you know, make that change? I don't know. I'll keep you posted. But if you've had any success in dealing with these companies, I'd love to hear about it. 312-981-7200. Give me a call or a text. You've got legal recreational marijuana coming to the state of Illinois on January 1st. Well, what's the difference between the legal marijuana and the medical marijuana that you've been able to get for a while now? What's going on with the vaping? Are they going to still sell vaping products? What's the problem? What's causing it? I'll ask all the people from Dispensary 33 in Chicago coming up. I'm Ken Smith. This is 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Ken Smith with you. And right now I'm joined by, from Dispensary 33 in Chicago, Abigail Watkins and Paul Lee. Welcome to 720 WGN.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you for coming in on this Wednesday night. I don't want to be rude. Would you like some Long John Silver's crumbs? I don't know if you were listening earlier.
No, thank you very much.
If you might get the munchies later, this would probably be perfect.
Perfect. Thanks, Ken.
So I wanted to have you in because, as we all know, marijuana is going to be legal at the beginning of the year. Yep. Recreational marijuana is going to be legal at the beginning of the year. And I wanted to talk to you about the difference between medical marijuana, the legal marijuana. But I want to talk to you a little bit about vaping first. But before we get into mm-hmm. that, Paul, tell me, what is Dispensary 33? I know you're located, where would it be? Like
Clark and Argyle in Andersonville.
Andersonville, okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and Dispensary 33, we are a medical cannabis facility. We've been open. We were the first open in Chicago in 2015, December 9th. We are a very particular dispensary, in fact, that we are very, we like to curate our selection in terms of providing the best cannabis products we can in Illinois. So we take a lot of time to do our research on the cannabis science and all the products that we do curate. And again, starting next year, we'll also be recreational as well, like you said. So we are getting ready for that, definitely.
So as of the first, you'll be able to sell recreational marijuana and you'll be able to sell the medical marijuana as you've been doing since 2015, you said?
Right, yeah. So currently you have to be a medical cannabis patient in order to purchase from us. But starting January 1st, we'll also be able to sell to the general public if you're over 21 years of age.
Okay, sounds good. Be sure to check out the CB app or hit up Facebook and tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 p.m. on WGN-TV. Your pick may be Chicago's Best. Now, I know that a couple of weeks ago I was talking about sports betting and how you can sports bet now. If that's going to be legal on the 1st of January as well in Illinois, but you can already go to Indiana, you can already go to the horseshoe, go to the boat and do it.
Sure.
And I talked about how intimidating it must be to go and make that bet for the first time. I can't imagine how intimidating it must be to walk into a dispensary for the first time. Uh-huh. And first of all, you probably are expecting sirens to go off and gates to come down behind you. Right. And, you know, it's a it's a sting. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So do you find that when people come in there for the first time, Abigail, they're deer in headlights?
Oh, they're so excited.
They're so excited.
Well, it depends on the person. Sometimes, I mean, currently, since we are a medical cannabis dispensary, sometimes patients have never smoked before. And so we have to take that into account, their experience level. We do a first-time patient interview with them, help them kind of navigate the whole process. But it's a whole new experience. You're walking into a retail experience you've never seen before, never been before. You've never gotten a receipt for your cannabis before. But those who have smoked, like, it's so exciting.
So what do you have to do in order to obtain a medical marijuana card? What kind of illnesses do you have to have? And I'm sure that I know that cancer, you know, for years everybody talked about, my dad hated only hippies smoked marijuana until he got cancer, you know, and then he wanted me to get him some marijuana. Right. So just very quickly, what are some of the ailments where it is illegal in Illinois to have a medical marijuana card in order to get that?
Yeah, so in Illinois, there's over 50 qualifying conditions. They just expanded it to more in August. So
okay.
Some of the most common are cancer, PTSD, or post-concussion syndrome. But recently, like, chronic pain was added to the list, which is huge.
What is chronic pain?
Chronic pain is just, you know, it's a generic symptom, or someone, basically, if someone's complaining of pain.
Oh, wait a minute, or do you mean chronic pain?
All right.
That's the, it really does open up access to a lot of people in Illinois, for sure. But yeah.
Yeah, so it's basically a patient complaining of pain that's not going to be going away, and, you know, it's going to basically be staying with them for perhaps the rest of their life. So cannabis really helps with a lot of that type of pain that you can't cure with traditional opioids or medicines.
Oh, now, I asked my doctor, my primary care physician, mm-hmm. about a medical marijuana card, and she said that she could not issue one.
Well, doctor,
so mm-hmm. where do you have to go to get a medical marijuana card if you can't get it from your primary care physician, who's the one who's going to say that you have chronic pain or something of that nature?
Yeah, so there are a lot of doctors that have, like, a private practice where they are signing certs. Sometimes, depending on the hospital or, like, organization that they're working under, they can't, based because of the hospital's insurance or because they can't. But there are, like, a whole, even on, like, the Illinois Department of Public Health website, there's a whole list of local health departments that have services or provide, like, a list of physicians that sign certifications.
Okay, so it may not be your doctor, but you can find a doctor. See, that seems kind of, don't want to say fishy to me, but it sounds a little, wait a minute, I have to go find somebody who's going to give me this prescription or whatever. You're giving me a look.
Well, okay, so a doctor must sign the physician certification. The doctor is signing a confirmation or confirmation of a diagnosis.
Okay.
If you have a diagnosis that qualifies you for a medical card, you merely need the doctor to sign the certification saying you have this condition. And then you basically apply for the card through the Illinois Department of Public Health. Any doctor that can prescribe medicines can sign this form for you.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So then to get a medical marijuana card, is it free?
No, it's not free.
Okay.
It does have a cost associated with it, and it depends on how many years you sort of have the card for, either 1, 2, or 3 years in terms of expiration date. I believe they're also changing that come January 1st as well. Medical cards will last longer for certain patients that have more sort of chronic
illnesses.
Exactly.
Okay.
And there's also reduced application fees for those who are on Social Security or disability.
Nice.
And what about a background check or anything like that? Let's say that you have some type of I don't want to say a felony, but let's say you have something that's, you know, on your record or something like that. Would that exclude you from being able to get a medical marijuana card?
No. Okay. They used to have a fingerprint requirement, but they got rid of that a long time ago. So, no, you don't need it anymore.
Abigail Watkins is our guest, along with Paul Lee. They're from Dispensary 33 at 5001 North Clark in Chicago. Dispensary33.com is their website. And after the news, I want to ask you about why we would still need a medical marijuana card after January 1st when recreational marijuana is available. And you don't need a card or a certificate for it. And I also want to ask you about the vaping controversy that is sweeping the nation now, and if vaping is indeed safe. And I'll talk to you about that right after we're done with the news with Vic Vaughn. 720 WGN, thank you very much, Vic Vaughn. Ken Smith with you, joined by Abigail Watkins and Paul Lee from Dispensary 33, dispensary33.com. Named one of the 10 most beautiful cannabis dispensaries in America, by the way, by Leafy. And I want to talk to you about the vaping controversy that's going on right now. So there have been a lot of, as a matter of fact, I've got people texting here to 312-981-7200 and 708 texts in. People have been vaping for at least 5 years. Why all the sudden respiratory illnesses? I talked to, we were just talking about Riot Fest, which took place in Douglas Park a few weeks ago. And so I was asking some of the people there who vape, well, why do you think there's so many problems with vaping right now? Mm-hmm. And what they were saying was, if you're getting, and you can tell me if you think this is the case, what they were saying was, well, if you're getting your vaping products from a source that you can trust, something is that's reputable, then it's going to be fine. But if you're getting it from the guy, just some guy black on the street, market. Black market,
right,
then it's going to be no different than any other drug that you're getting on the black market throughout the years. They're going to do something to dilute it. So that they can sell more of it and make more money. Mm-hmm. Is that what you think is happening?
I think I would say that I'm definitely not sure what's happening, right? But that's certainly a strong suspect, right?
Okay.
Illegal cartridges. I think even the CDC has said that a lot of the cases that they've looked at, of which I think there's like 800 cases kind of all linked to vaping right now, that, you know, a lot of them were linked to sort of illegal THC cartridges, or they had them in their possession or had used them. And I think it's true that when you're looking at unregulated products, you know, basically products that are made by who knows, right? There's no regulation on them. You simply don't know what's inside the cartridge itself, right, in terms of the liquid.
Okay.
A lot of them are going to look similar or have different flow rates that are going to look similar. So,
and the liquid that is in there is a oil, correct?
It's not an, well, so it depends on who made it. And I think that's what people were saying. If when you're buying from a regulated market, like if we take Illinois, for example, every single product that we sell in our dispensary has gone through vigorous testing, laboratory testing that's telling you exactly what's in the product itself in terms of cannabinoids and terpene content, but also what's not in it, such as microbial testing, pesticide testing, solvent testing, and even basically any other particle besides what is in there in terms of cannabis or terpenes.
So long story short is if you are getting your vaping product from a legal Illinois dispensary or legal dispensary, wherever it happens to be, whatever state you happen to be in, you know what's in it and you know what's not in it. It has been tested and it is regulated.
Exactly, yeah. And the companies that are making it are not interested in taking shortcuts or making products, like you said, to dilute them.
Well, why kill the golden goose, right?
Pretty much. They don't have any reason to do these things. Just like another larger company in a regulated industry is not interested in breaking any rules just to save some bucks. It's something that they're all interested in making the highest quality product. And yes, the lab testing definitely tells us a lot in terms of how safe the products are, in my opinion, because of what's not in it. You know, basically, the microbial testing, the pesticide testing, and the solvent testing is telling us that these things are free and clear. They're tested to, they have to be under 10 parts per million in Illinois. And I think, like, when you look at, like, Colorado, they're allowed something over 500 parts per million for some of their concentrates. So even within that subset of lab testing, Illinois is very, very clean.
Okay.
You know, so like that's just another indicator that, yes, the products you're using, that is 100% cannabis. Or, you know, if it, you know, does it have anything else besides the cannabinoids? Yes, it's these terpenes, but what does it not have? You know, like these sort of pesticides or other things that are known to be bad for people, you know.
So what is the difference between vaping, you know, somebody's coming into your dispensary for the first time, mm-hmm. right? They have chronic pain. John Doe or Jane Doe has chronic pain. They've come into your dispensary for the first time. Mm-hmm. What would you suggest for them? Would you suggest for them a vaping product? Would you suggest for them actual flower, actual, you know, mm-hmm. cannabis that they would roll, or it's pre-rolled, or I don't even know, mm-hmm. and that they smoke? What would you suggest, Abigail?
Well, it really depends on the person and their experience level, like I said earlier, and also
it's a first timer.
Yeah, I mean, well, smoking really is the easiest way to predict effect and predict dosing, just because exactly what you are smoking is the effects that you get from that is going to, like, after 15 minutes, you know exactly how high you are or how much relief that you're getting.
Okay.
Versus like edibles, you might not know what your correct dosage is the first time. But we always work with patients, like, when they come in to figure that out with them, or like what their goals are.
So that is something that you do at the dispensary, is you try and you help the patient figure out what's the right amount for them, depending on whether or not they're vaping or they're doing an edible or they're doing straight up smoking.
Right. Yeah. It, like Abigail said, experience level is really important. And at Dispensary 33, we really try to take effort to really take a history and find out, like she said, your goals or what symptoms you're trying to relieve, and then sort of point them in the direction that is sort of good for them. So yes, we definitely do recommend smoking, simply because you do know you're going to get all the cannabis and, you know, cannabinoids and terpenes, because smoking is very complete. It's also going to take the fastest of all the methods of consumption. And, you know, it's what we sort of recommend, but a lot of people, they don't want to smoke, you know, these days. So they will turn to something like vaping or edibles. And what's important to understand is sort of dosage. Right. Dosage is a very important aspect of using cannabis. So a lot of people don't pay attention to dosing, but it is important for especially beginners, because they don't know their dose.
Okay.
So we don't want them to be uncomfortable by taking too much. Right. There is a sort of a window of which pain relief or other symptom relief is at its highest. And if you go sort of too little or over it, it's not as effective as when you're in that window, just like other medicines as well.
Interesting. 312-981-7200. Johnny is giving us a call. Johnny, welcome to 720 WGN.
Hey, you know, I'm a faithful WGN listener, and I leave my radio on all the time with that on. And I just came home and I walked into this conversation you're having, and I was curious about when January 1st comes around. How are corporations, companies, whatever, going to rationalize that? It's like, are you going to be able to fail a drug test, or can they not use that against you anymore?
That's an interesting question. Thank you, Johnny. I know that the company that my wife works for, they're no longer allowed to ask or drug test for cannabis because it is legal in so many places.
That's cool.
Do you find that it's still... that could end up still being a problem in some places if you've got a medical marijuana card, or, hey, it's legal in the state of Illinois. Do you know, will an employer still be able to deny you employment because you have that in your system?
I do believe companies by law are still allowed to, you know, drug test, and they're not required to, you know, sort of keep people on just because it's now legal in Illinois. So okay. there are no sort of rights or protections in that way that I know of. However, I do think that many companies and very large companies are cognizant that, you know, it is legal, and, you know, what is the sense in cutting your workforce simply because of, you know, cannabis use? So I too have heard of very large companies, one in particular, that is now stopping drug testing in Illinois because of the law. You know, so
we were talking a little bit earlier about, you mentioned edibles. So vaping is the vaping of the, you know, it's like a vaping pen or it's a vaping cartridge that you inhale the vapors.
Mm-hmm.
You've got actually smoking the cannabis, the weed.
Mm-hmm.
Are they pre-rolled?
Yeah, or we have pre-rolls. We have like what we call loose flower. Right, and that's like sort of what you think of in like the sandwich baggie that you get from your dealer, right? That's
a like what I have my bun. Long John Silver's crumbs in right now.
Exactly.
Yes, very delicious.
This would be lots of money on the black market here on the street. Those Long John Silver's crumbs.
Right.
Okay, so what exactly is an edible, and in what form do these edibles come in?
Edibles is basically, it's called an infused product where you use a cannabis extraction in order to infuse a food product with the THC. And they come in all different types of forms. The most popular are in general gummies or chocolate, and that's sort of what everybody is used to. However, now they have drinks, they have tablets. There are patches, there's lotions, gels, there's like so many different forms. I've seen hot chocolate, I've seen pasta sauce, I've seen, not in Illinois, but I've seen it in other states. But truly, they come in every form. And now even there's infused dinners where people like cooks and chefs are actually infusing the dinner as you're eating it with primarily CBD. However, there are other dinners that include THC with their meals as well. And mostly in a low dose fashion, so as to not like completely destroy everybody, but it's becoming more popular. And so like infused products are definitely on the rise, and one of the best regulated products in the cannabis world, for sure.
I haven't even had a chance to ask you about CBDs and what they're for as far as the difference between CBDs and THCs. And I apologize, still haven't asked you about the difference between what's happening today if you have a medical marijuana card and what's going to happen on January 1st if you just want recreational marijuana. And what's the difference? Can you hang around for one more segment with me?
Yeah,
please?
For sure.
Yeah, definitely.
I appreciate it. Abigail Watkins, Paul Lee from Dispensary 33 on the north side of Chicago, dispensary33.com. If you have a question, 312-981-7200. Shoot me a text or give me a call. 720 WGN. Ken Smith with you until 1 a.m. Joined by Abigail Watkins and Paul Lee from Dispensary 33, 5001 North Clark Street in Chicago. Dispensary33.com. They were the first dispensary, marijuana dispensary, to open up in the city of Chicago. And you talked about pain management because of the cannabis. So what causes the pain, what eases the pain, is the CBDs, right?
No, I think most people use, when they experience pain relief from cannabis,
okay,
they experience it from the THC binding to what's called the CB1 or CB2 receptors.
Okay. Wasn't that a Chris Rock movie?
Just
that might have been CB4 or something. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So yeah, you have this system in your body called the endocannabinoid system. It's a natural system that everybody has, and there are these things called endocannabinoids that your body makes that bind to these receptors. In essence, when you smoke the cannabis plant or however you use it, the THC is going to bind to one of these CB1 or CB2 receptors, and that will do a whole host of things, you know, to the receptor site that it's binding to including the release of, you know, different dopamines and things like that. It's essentially affecting certain parts of your brain. CBD is the second most abundant cannabinoid found in the plant. CBD is, when it is used in conjunction with THC, is going to affect its affinity to bind to either the CB1 receptor. CB1 receptors are located primarily in your head and spine. This is why when you smoke, it's going to stick mostly to those areas, we think, and why you quote-unquote get high, right?
Okay.
The CBD is going to sort of lessen its affinity to bind to that CB1. It's going to then want to bind to CB2 receptors located more throughout your body. So,
okay, so, all right, so you have chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to go to work. So you don't want to get high before you go to work.
Mm-hmm.
Then what's your option?
So you're going to have to regulate your dosage mostly.
Okay.
Right? And certainly the type of pain is going to affect how you use either THC with CBD or just THC alone. For instance, THC is very good at nerve pain. However, if you have like more of a physical or joint pain, you're definitely going to want to add CBD to it in order to bring that THC more towards your body. So, and then when we're talking about trying to not get as high when you're going to work, you're going to have to work on your dosage, right? Because you're going to want to relieve the amount of psychoactivity that you have while still retaining some of that pain relief that you need. But there's lots of different pains that cannabis can resolve, you know? So it's not as easy as saying like CBD is for pain and THC is just for high.
Okay.
It's actually not like that at all. You can certainly take CBD by itself. There are studies there that,
because whenever I go to a street fest in Chicago, mm-hmm. there's always some tent set up where they're trying to get me to take some CBD drops.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that just something that's completely useless or?
I mean, I think the dosage needs to usually be raised. So, like, we're not exactly sure what kind of dosages you need for CBD only. What's very clear, though, is if you use THC in conjunction with CBD, it becomes very effective at low doses.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yes, yes.
So even if you're taking THC with even a lower dose of CBD, that CBD is more effective with the THC.
The CBD is affecting the THC's effectiveness to go to other receptors.
Okay.
Yeah.
So January 1st, recreational marijuana legal in Illinois. What is the difference? What will be the difference between John Doe that has the medical marijuana card right now and John Doe, who just walks into Dispensary 33 on January 1st at midnight, because I'm sure you're going to be open at midnight and have balloons and clowns and everything. And every news station in town will be broadcast, will be outside going, oh, it's 10 seconds till it's legal. So what's
I wish
this, what's,
we were able to open up at midnight.
Yeah, right. Hey, come to my house.
So there we go. All right, we're all invited to Paul's for his New Year's Eve party. So what's the major difference between the medical marijuana and the medical marijuana card and what you can do with it and just recreationally?
Yeah, so the current medical program won't change with the new law going into effect. So all the patients will still have their current rights as medical patients. So there's a 2.25. It really comes down to taxes. You're going to pay less in taxes. There's a 2.25% pharmaceutical tax built into the cost of all products right now. That's not going to change for medical. But for any 21-plus recreational customer, they're going to be paying 10% tax on any product that has less than 35% THC. They're going to be paying a 20% tax on infused products, which is like edibles. And then a 25% tax on any product that has over 35% THC. So that would be like a vape cartridge or a concentrate. So really it comes down to the amount of taxes you're paying. And also a medical card holder will have the ability to grow, home grow up to 5 root bound plants at home. And then also the ability to be able to have purchase more at a time. So a medical card holder can purchase up to 2.5 ounces every 2 weeks.
Which is, if you can compare it to my crunchies, what's 2.5 ounces?
It's 70 grams.
Okay.
About. Yeah, so it's like two of those. Two and a half of those.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Bill has a question about... You got a question about CBDs. Bill, you're on 720
WGN. Yeah, you were talking a little bit ago about the CBDs for pain. How do you explain, then, the school bus driver, the young lady that got fired about 2 weeks ago in one of the suburbs because she was using the cannabis oil for back pain and rubbing it on her, and they pulled a drug test, and she lost her job on account of that?
Okay, she's saying that a school bus driver lost their job because they were taking CBD cream and got tested and lost their job. Well, first of all, that could have just been, well, she's driving a school bus, so maybe she's got a more stringent...
For sure. If you drive a school bus or have a commercial driver's license,
yes.
I believe you can't get a...
Yeah, you can't... If you hold a commercial driver's license, you do not qualify for the medical program in Illinois. You can't.
Okay.
And so if she was tested positive for THC, then that's probably definitely grounds for...
Well, she was saying that she took a CBD cream for back pain and tested positive for that, I guess.
But I don't know of drug tests that test for CBD, so I don't know the particulars of that.
Okay, case. Yeah, I'm not sure either. Yeah, Bill,
I feel bad for her, but yeah.
But thank you, Bill, for calling in. You had mentioned the taxes. Are the taxes uniform statewide, or are they going to differ from county to county?
So there can be up to a half of a percentage of county taxes, and then up to 3.5% taxes per municipality. So the city of Chicago or like if another municipality can.
So it's kind of like a gasoline tax. You're going to have your state tax, but you could also have a county tax on top of it, and you could also have a city tax on top of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Liquor is similar.
It's liquor, right. So it's just like every other...
Syntax
or vice or whatever you happen to call it, although you said the taxes will be lower if you have the medical marijuana card.
Yes.
And the medical marijuana card costs how much?
I think it's $100.
$150,
yeah, so
I think?
$100 for 1 year, $200 for 2 year, and $250 for 3 years to the state.
Okay. So what are you expecting as far as when the calendar changes over to 2020? Is there going to be just an onslaught of people coming into your dispensary? And do you expect those people to be first-time triers, novices?
I definitely think it's going to be celebratory, right? I think I'm going to see a lot of people who have been waiting quite a long time for Chicago or Illinois to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Basically be free in a sense. So I think a lot of people on that particular day are going to want to just be part of the moment, right? It's going to be New Year's and they're going to want to celebrate. But I do think during that first week, because of the way cannabis is, there's a lot of curious people who have not used I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that have not smoked since college, right? Like, that's like the number one thing I hear.
Well, for me, those people wouldn't have smoked for a long, long time. For you, probably not so much.
I don't know. Just Asian. But yeah, I just think that... a lot of people, both like because of the popularity of cannabis now, there's so many people that are interested in just seeing what the store looks like, right? You see a lot of people, like we've been on that corner for 4 years, but you haven't been able to come in. But now on that day, you'll be able to come in and see
what's behind the curtain.
I want you to come in and say hi. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
It'll be a great day, yeah.
Abigail Watkins and Paul Lee from Dispensary 33, 5001 North Clark in Chicago, dispensary33.com. Thank you for coming in and answering all of our questions. And if we have more questions, and I'm sure we will as we get closer to January 1st, please come back.
I would love
We'd love to have you back
Thanks
in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so
Hopefully
much.
We'll see you January 1.
Yeah. Sounds good. 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Vic Vaughn, in the WGN newsroom. Ken Smith with you in the WGN Skyline studio until 1 a.m. And then Nick DiGilio comes in at 1 a.m. Thanks to the people from Dispensary 33. I've learned a lot there. I've been hearing all this stuff about vaping and it's not even an oil. He said we could talk for another hour about how it's not an oil. We'll have to save that one for another day. But if you've been watching the news and listening to WGN today, you have heard a lot about the Marnie Yang case back in 2007. There was a murder in 2007 of a young woman who was apparently the girlfriend of Chicago Bear Sean Gale and carrying his baby. And they're saying that Marnie Yang killed her, jealous rage, covered her tracks, and she was sentenced to life in prison. Now, they want to have a new trial. They say she didn't do it. They say she was coerced into confessing. Joining us right now is the lead investigator for MSI Detective Services, hired by the Yang family in this case, Steve Lupino. Welcome to 720 WGN.
Hey, Ken, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you on this now Thursday morning?
Well, we've had a long 2 days. Our team has been, we've been on this for close to 3 years. And yesterday, along with my boss, Perry, and the rest of our team, and the attorney, Jed Stone, we went to the Lake County Courthouse, and we filed Marnie Yang's post-conviction petition, which actually a local TV station has posted it online. So if anybody wants to see it or download it, it's on scribd.com. I think it's scribd.com. With all of the, it's 29 pages, plus with all the exhibits, it's about 600 pages total.
Okay, so to remind everyone about this case, it was 2007. Was that when the murder occurred, or was that when the trial took place in 2007? The murder was in 2007 of Ronnie Reuter.
Right. In October 4th, 2007, Ronnie Reuter was murdered. She was 7 months pregnant with the baby of 85 Super Bowl champ Sean Gale. They were going to name the baby Skylar. She lived in Deerfield over on Elm Street. The shots were fired at 7:53 in the morning. 911 was called at precisely 8:07. And at 8:11, Deerfield responded. They said, clear the air. There's a white female on the floor of the kitchen, and that's where everything started. They shut down the schools because they didn't know if there was an active shooter or not. Ronnie's Jeep was still parked in front of the residence, and she was shot as she was leaving for work.
Steve, what was Marnie Yang, who was now convicted for two life sentences for the death of Ms. Reuter and also the death of her child, what was Marnie Yang's relationship to Ms. Reuter?
They never met.
They did not know each other.
The only connection they had was Sean Gale. Sean Gale, give you a little backstory on Sean and Ronnie. Ronnie was from Potosi, Wisconsin, and she met Sean when the Bears used to practice in Platteville.
I almost went to college at the University of Wisconsin, Platteville.
Yeah, it's beautiful out there, actually. she ended up moving. She didn't live with Sean. Sean had numerous girlfriends.
Which Marnie was one of them?
Correct. Yeah. Actually, Marnie was with Sean the night before the murder.
Okay.
But that was the only connection that they had with Sean. They never met each other, whatsoever. And so what ended up happening, you know, the Deerfield police, the detectives were on this case, but because it was such a large case, they went to the Lake County Major Crimes Task Force. And if you know anything about the history about the Lake County Major Crimes Task Force, there's a lot of wrongdoings. There's police misconduct. And what we've done in our investigation, we have seen a lot of manipulated evidence. There's been a lot of wrongful convictions that have come out of Lake County. And I don't know if you know to put this on pause for a minute, there was a case back, in August 92, there was a rape and murder of an 11-year-old. His name was Juan Rivera. And they put him in jail, and he was in jail for 20 years. So finally he got a new trial, and they found out, they said, we have the subject's blood on your shoes. But his shoes weren't even sold in the United States until 6 months after the murder. So they planted the blood on his shoes. He ended up getting out. He sued for, you know, $21 million. But that's just there. You could Google the amount of wrongful convictions that have come out of Lake County. And we're so lucky because the attorney for Marty Yang, his name is Jed Stone. He's out of Waukegan. He's had exonerations for 9 people. So we're so happy with him. But there's so many things that have happened in this investigation, Ken, that we have just shaking our head and saying, how did this happen? How did this not happen? Marnie's original defense attorney passed away. And Jed took this case a couple years ago, and this is where we're at now.
So that's when the ball started rolling on what culminated yesterday with the press conference and you trying to get a new trial. I know at the time of the trial, prosecutors and investigators said that Yang took extraordinary steps to cover her tracks. She was driven by a jealous rage when she killed Reuter. So the death of her original lawyer, and it was taken over by the new lawyer, that's when, so this has been going on for about 3 years to get to this point where we're at right now.
Right, but even before Marnie was a subject, I can tell you, you know, and once again, this is all in the PC, the post-conviction that was filed yesterday. Okay. A week before the murder, one of the residents that lives, you know, where Ronnie lived, and these condos are very close to each other, one of the residents saw a male black walking through the parking lot, casing out the joint, is his words that he used with the police department. And when he met eyes with the gentleman, the guy gave him a look like, you shouldn't be watching me. The day of the murder, another resident saw a male black running from the parking lot. On the same day of the murder, another resident saw a male black. She described 5'7 to 5'8 with an athletic, muscular build walking up to Ronnie's unit. Now, that was the day of the murder. They asked her, is there a possibility it could have been a woman? And she's like, absolutely not. I work for a plastic surgeon. I know, I'm very knowledgeable when it comes to skin and jaw tones and things like that. Then that same person that said this person was 5'8 with a muscular build, now Marnie became a suspect. Now Marnie is 5 foot tall, weighed 99 pounds. Okay. The police go back January 1st, and they say, are you sure that this person, because this is the person that is a suspect, Marnie Yang. Mm-hmm. That same person now says, well, the person was probably 5 foot and had a thin build, which fits the narrative of the Lake County Major Crimes Task Force. And I just don't see in 3 months how somebody can shrink 8 pounds or 8 inches. I don't see in 3 months how somebody can go from an athletic build to a thin build. I don't see it. So I think about things that were, you know, about there's things saying that there was a silencer book. Marnie bought a silencer book. Yeah, she did. She did buy a silencer book for a guy that she was dating that worked with the Cook County Sheriff's Department as a joke, as a gag gift. And he ended up throwing it away. But the problem was the police did a garbage pull, and they see that with a receipt from things from Home Depot. And they're like, oh, she's buying stuff from Home Depot for a silencer. So what we went and did, which the original defense didn't do, is we took that receipt from Home Depot and we looked on the book about getting the silencer for this gun that they say was used, which was a Beretta 92FS. And you couldn't have used a silencer because of the barrel edge on that is not big enough. And even when it comes to the people that we work with forensics, there would be from steel wool or from with the silencer being used, there'd be some type of debris. There was no debris. But the first person that called in the 911 call, she was an elderly lady, and she still lives in the same building, and she was asked by the police, you know, do you think it could have been a silencer? And that's kind of weird. After they just find evidence of a silencer book, now they're asking her, hey, do you think it was a silencer? And her response was, you know what, I just saw a TV show or a movie last week where they used a silencer, and it sounded like that, like a pop, pop. So I think that there was a lot of leading of this is what we have, you know, can this story work? But, you know, what they did, with this, with the silencer to the shooter, for example. Right now, we have one of our experts. He's an ex-FBI agent, and we took Marnie at 5 foot tall, compared that to Ronnie, which was 5'9". She wasn't tall enough to shoot her. Where the shots go with the trajectory, and that wasn't done in the first. And so there's so many things that people, you know, if you Google the case or you see it on Dateline or 2020, and you're like, oh yeah, but she bought a silencer book, and right. Yeah, and this happened, but we can debunk everything. And she had bad counsel the first time, but to see, you know, we have to prove everything with validity. And believe me, knowing that. That these ladies were involved with a bear. Every Bears game, they talk about the 85 Bears, and we're not naive to the complexities of this case.
Well,
and
Steve, I want to ask you. I got to take a quick break, but Steve Lupino is with us. He's the lead investigator for MSI Detective Services, hired by Marnie Yang's family. Marnie Yang currently serving 2 life sentences for the death of. Ronnie Rauter, and now they're saying that she didn't do it, and they are trying to get a new trial. I know that Marnie Yang originally made a confession. She said that she confessed it. She said that she did do it. So I want to ask Steve about that. You talked about debunking some of the things that came up in the first trial. I want to talk about that. 312-981-7200. Call or text if you have a question about that. We have a couple of comments on the text line about that. I want to talk to you about that as well, Steve, when we come back. Ken Smith with you, talking about the Marnie Yang retrial that they're hoping to get on this 10-12-year-old case that involves a double murder in Deerfield and a 1985 Chicago Bear. Very interesting. We'll talk more about it in a second. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. We're talking about the Marnie Yang case. Marnie Yang serving 2 terms in prison right now for killing Ronnie Rauter in 2007, the girlfriend of former Chicago Bear Sean Gale. On the phone with us right now, Steve Lupino, the lead investigator for MSI Detective Services. They were hired by the Yang family, and they are now trying to get a new trial. Steve, I've got someone who sent us a text here at 312-981-7200 from 773. They're asking, what was Marnie's mental state then and now?
I've gone out to Logan a couple times out in Lincoln, Illinois to see her. She teaches class. She teaches Spanish. I mean, she's fluent in 5 languages. Marnie is a brilliant person. Marnie was a single mom. She had 3 kids. She had her twins, which were Andrew and Emily, and Brandon was her youngest son. She was a single mom working 3 jobs to make it happen. And, you know, you asked what earlier, you know, what her and Ronnie were, you know, what that they had in common. They were involved with an athlete, and I don't think that worked out too well. But Marnie's a great person. She's good people.
Okay, so.
And it's hard to say that because she's in prison. She's in prison for murder, and people hear you say that, and they're like, how can she be like that? But it's just.
Well, one of the reasons that she's in prison for murder is because she confessed. Why would she make a false confession?
Well, a lot of people ask that, and it happens a lot. The backstory on that is, like I was just talking about talking about her three kids. The police were taking her kids off the street. They were going into the home. They were picking them up at school. Now, at the time, the twins were 16 and Brandon was 11. They were bringing them back to police stations without a parent, without legal. They asked for an attorney. Police were telling them, no, we're not going to give you an attorney.
Well, was Marnie in custody at the time?
Nope. Nope. Marnie would be at work. They would pull them from school. And what's supposed to happen, they were supposed to be interviewed, but they were being interrogated. And when that happens, there has to be at least two police officers in the room, one of them doing the questioning, and the other one has to be a youth officer, which is an advocate for that suspect. And they would ask them questions. And they had them to the point where, you know, Andrew was placed in a psychiatric unit. He had thoughts of suicide. This is somebody who's 16 years old, and they're telling him, we know you did it or your mom did it. Then, in another room, they would take the other sister. They were all separated. They would take Emily, his sister, and they were telling her, you know, we think your brother and your mom did this. The police got to the point that they were harassing this family for so many years. Marnie had been divorced from their father. And the police actually told Emily, listen, we know you haven't seen your dad in 8 years. If you write this down, and this down, we'll get in contact with him. So she wrote down what they wanted her to do.
That's the, and they said, they asked this of the daughter?
Of the daughter, Emily, yes. Okay. Write down this statement, which is false, which is lies, and we'll get you in touch with your father. At that time, she thought that was going to be the only family member she was going to see anymore because they were going to put away her mom and her brother. She was banging her head against the table in an interrogation room. So she gets the number from her father. They said, he can't wait to talk to you. She calls him up, and he says, you know, blank you, don't ever call me again. So they lied to her. They harassed his family for 2 years. Marnie finally got a phone call from her friend Christy Passion, which we'll talk about in a minute. And she said she was just talking to the Lake County Major Crimes Task Force. And Marnie, they are putting an arrest warrant out for Andrew for the murder of Ronnie and Skylar. At that time, and this is all, by the way, this has all been in logs because all the phone conversations were being listened to by Lake County and Cook County. She called her father, Larry, who was at the Lyric Opera House, and she said, I just got a phone call from Christy. They're going to lock Andrew up for murder. She says, I need them to stop harassing my family. I'm just going to say that I did it and then let my attorney get me out of this. I just can't have them harassing the family.
Okay, slow down for 1 second. Slow down.
Yeah.
So she says that I'm going to confess to this because I don't want she's trying to protect, doesn't want her children arrested, one of her children arrested
Correct.
For this.
Correct. Correct.
But wasn't she already a suspect?
You said that they were a suspect. She was a suspect for 2 years. But they were trying to piece things together. So they had this girl, Christy, who was a friend of hers.
Okay.
And just so you know, I'm going back to like when I was saying the post-conviction, and at the beginning I was saying that it's online, that you can get this, it's public record. We have all of these the pieces of evidence in there. We have we have an audio on there where Christy talks to Marnie, and Marnie says to her, well, let's just start making blank up. She said, you know, let's start making some crap up. That's on there, and this is before she was arrested.
Okay, so according to you and her people, her investigators and her lawyers, she decided to save her children.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make this stuff up so that I can take the blame for it,
mm-hmm.
and not my children.
Correct.
Okay,
and then she met up with Christy at a Denny's in Arlington Heights. And Christy was wired by the Lake County Major Crimes Task Force. And she'd already had this conversation with Christy. Let's make this crap. I'm going to make some crap up. And during the, she started asking her questions about what she's like, let's talk about, they were talking about the murder. And she's like, yeah, I did this. She was saying things that never could have happened. She said, yeah, I shot her and it was dark in there. Well, we saw the crime scene photos. It happened at 7:53 in the morning on October 4th. We looked at all weather, the past weather things. It was sunny out. She said when she went to leave, Ronnie like went to kick her. There were no bruises or abrasions or cuts on the legs. Her legs were nowhere near the door where Marnie went to, when Marnie would be exiting. She said to Christy, yeah, I did one final shot. And the way Ronnie fell, it wouldn't have happened. She also said that she fell into the counter. She was nowhere near the counter. She was in front of the refrigerator. So everything that she told Christy, she did make up stuff. And she made up all these things that never even happened.
Steve, I've got less than less than 30 seconds left, Steve. I know that she wants a new trial. What right. are the chances that she's able to get this new trial? You got 10 seconds.
She's going to get it because there was unknown male DNA from unspent shell casings found there. Her DNA wasn't there. Her prints were not there. She was at home when this happened. We have proof that she was at home. She had a gun stolen 5 months before the murder. It was not disclosed at the trial to the jury, and it's all going to come out. She didn't do it.
Steve,
there's someone out there. Someone needs to help us and call us to let us know what they know. Somebody knows something.
It's fascinating. I think we're just at the beginning of this. We'll have to see what happens. Steve Lupino, lead investigator for MSI Detective Services, hired by the Yang family, Marnie Yang, trying to get a new trial now after confessing over 10 years ago that she committed this double murder. She now says that she did that to protect her children, and now she wants a new trial. We will see what happens. Thank you very much. Thank you, Vic. 720 WGN. Ken Smith with you for another half an hour or so, and then I'll turn it over to Nick DiGilio. It's been a busy show today, and it's going to continue to stay that way. Yes, the music means that it is Halloween. And do you like haunted houses? I was saying earlier that my wife loves haunted houses. And with us right now is the general manager of the 13th floor haunted house, Erica Daybook, and also her wardrobe manager, Danny, is with us. Welcome to 720 WGN.
Thank you for having us. We're excited to be here.
Thanks for coming in on this spooky night. Foggy and rainy.
Oh, it's perfect. It's perfect.
I wish it were. I think we don't have too bad of a view. Usually it's a little bit of a better view out the window here at the Skyline Studio, but it's not too bad.
It's not too bad.
Yeah. So I came to your haunted house, which is in, well, first of all, before I talk about what happened when I got there, where is the 13th floor? Tell me about the 13th floor. Where is it, and how did this whole concept come about?
That's a great question. So first of all, it is located in Melrose Park, Illinois, quite obviously. And the idea
I hope so, because it'll be a long drive to go to Melrose Park,
in
Kansas.
Florida.
Yeah, right.
And the 13th floor actually started years ago when our owners met each other. Their love of horror brought them together, and they started this nationwide haunted house, the 13th floor. So we have locations all over the country.
And your website is 13th floor, the number 13, 13thfloorchicago.com.
Exactly.
And you're located in Melrose Park. And so the name 13th floor, is there some type of a concept behind this? Or
sure. So yeah. So many buildings don't have the 13th floor. It's a big super.
That's true. That's true. If you ever notice that, next time you get into a building, you go into the elevator, check and see if they have a 13th floor on the elevator. Now, they have a 13th floor. It's not like you can skip a 13th floor, but they kind of don't have offices on it. You can't really get off on the regular elevator on the 13th floor. I guess it's superstition, right?
Exactly. So the idea was to bring that legend to life and to give our customers the experience of the 13th floor and all the creatures and creepiness that reside there.
And you have been open in Chicago for how many years now?
This will be our sixth season.
And is it different every year? Is there maybe a different theme every year or something of that nature?
Oh, yeah. So it's definitely a year-round job. That's one of the biggest questions I get is, how long does it take? It takes all year. We work on themes starting typically in March, and then from there we just start building. So every year we do change something so that our customers come back not knowing what to expect.
And if you haven't been to a haunted house in a while, like I hadn't been to a haunted house, and I couldn't tell you how long. I mean, the last time I went to haunted house, you know, you go in there and you put your hand in a hat and it had spaghetti in it, and they tell you it was brains or something like that. Or you put your hand in it and it had peeled grapes in it, and they tell you it was eyeballs or something like that.
Sure.
This is almost like a movie set.
Definitely.
It's very detailed.
Oh yeah. You know, 13th floor is all about that. So we have customers that are incredibly scared, and they may not necessarily notice every detail, but when you walk into a haunted house that doesn't have as much detail, that's a little more bare, you can feel
that.
You
notice it.
And that fourth wall is broken then, you know? So we want our customers to be completely immersed, and they are. We have really high ceilings. We're blessed to have high ceilings, so our scenes just are epic and huge, and you have to look all over the place. And again, it takes you out of that warehouse that we're located in and right in that world.
And how many people do you have working for you, not just behind the scenes and building the sets and coming up with the concepts, but the different actors that you have working the haunted house on a daily basis?
Sure. So there's many moving parts to a haunted house. On an average night, we have anywhere from 50 to 100 actors. We have an event staff team that controls all of the operations, the customer service, the customer experience outside of the actual show. And there's about 20 of them a night. We have cashiers. We have managers. So, gosh, probably about 150 people in that place on any given night.
Wow.
Not to mention the customers.
Not to mention customers. And so you have two haunted houses in one. Is
sure.
that correct?
Yep.
Talk to me about the first thing that you see you go through, and then once you finally start to calm down from that one, then you get ushered through another one.
Oh, yeah.
So you have two haunted houses. Tell me about the first one.
Definitely. So the first attraction this year, the theme is Creature Feature, and that is basically old school horror creatures, but our version of them. So you'll see vampires, witches, a hunchback, Frankenstein, mummies. Creature of the Black Lagoon might appear, all kinds of old classic creatures in that first show. So that's cool.
And then the second
show is The Other Side, which is our take on 1980s horror. Basically, it takes place in a science fiction facility where evil scientists are working on kind of experimenting with other dimensional creatures, and those outer dimensional creatures have taken over our world.
And Danny, you're the wardrobe manager.
Yes.
And as Erica was saying, that, you know, there's 150 people working there on a daily basis, and there's how many actors did you say at one time?
50 to 100.
50 to 100.
Yeah.
So that's 50 to 100 people that you have to put into costume. And we're not just talking about someone with a sheet over them and a mask on, are we?
Right. No. Yeah, I'm responsible for.
Can you get a little closer to that microphone?
Sorry.
Just a little bit. That's all right.
I'm a.
No reason to be scared.
Yeah, so I'm responsible for dressing and making sure all of the actors within and outside of the show are looking to their best and basically getting dressed into their roles. And then outside of that, we have a makeup team who does, you know, the makeup and the rest of the special effects before sending them in.
So for some of the more elaborate costumes and makeup for those actors, how long are they in makeup in order to perform every night?
So based off of our volume versus our makeup team, we have anywhere between 4 to 5 girls a night doing makeup.
Okay.
Along with our makeup manager, Sarah. So they get anywhere between about 10 to 15 minutes per face. Just because of their volume. That's about as long as they've got to do their makeup. I dress them. They probably stand at my podium for maybe 5 minutes, and then they go change and then get back into a line for makeup. And
okay.
Then,
so yeah. The people who are the makeup artists for you,
mm-hmm.
where are you getting those people from? Because I'm sure that they're probably, are they coming from a traditional makeup background, or is there some, how is it that you end up doing makeup for haunted houses and things of that nature?
Well, a lot of us, so I personally started as just somebody who wanted to work at a haunted house.
You just were a fan of something you loved.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's mostly how we find a lot of our people. They're, you know, they come in as just people who think it would be cool to work at a haunted house, and they become inspired and, you know, eventually build their way up and work their way into like doing their makeup and creating their own characters and creating costumes and things like that.
And our makeup artists have a wide variety of different skills. They were at different levels when they started. And then our makeup manager, Sarah, is focused on training them and getting them very good at using the airbrush and putting on prosthetics, and we call it zombie skin. So they're well trained. So as long as you have the drive and in general a talent for some makeup, we can train the heck out of you and make you really good. So that's what Sarah's done with her team. She's really molded them, and they come back year after year after year to be part of the makeup team.
And the actors, do they come back year after year after year? Do you find yourself hiring new actors every year, and when does that process begin?
It's a great question. So we have a lot of returning actors. I mean, kids have been doing this for just as long as I've been there, as long as Danny's been there. And then we also hire a ton of new actors. So a lot of times, I would say this year it's like 50-50. We have 50% returning, 50% new. And we start hiring actors in the early summer. And then throughout the summer, we do intensive workshops where we're training them to scare people and to do cool stunts and how to use the chainsaw scare. And we start our haunt season in like June.
So the warehouse that you're located in, you're there 12 months a year?
Oh yeah.
It's a continual thing. Mm-hmm. So you're always training there and updating it and doing those types of things. Exactly. throughout the course of the year.
Oh yeah. Not to mention off-season events. So we do a Krampus Christmas themed event, which is, it's middle of December usually.
Okay, well, it's a good time for it.
Probably, yeah. Right? It's in March. it's a perfect time for a Christmas-themed event. That's very successful, a lot of fun, a totally different environment. Still spooky, but cozy spook.
A little kind of a hot chocolate vibe to it.
Yeah, we sell hot chocolate at the event.
Well, there you go.
You have to. We also do a Love Bites Valentine's Day event, which is usually vampire-focused because vampires are sexy. You know, they embody Valentine's Day.
I didn't know that. So I thought that only you have the haunted house during the Halloween period. So you've got your real money time at Halloween.
Sure.
But you're also doing a Christmas and a Valentine's Day as well.
Yep. Yeah, we do off-season events. And then we also do a zombie apocalypse event, which is a live, like, zombie. You basically shoot zombies, and we train our actors to take a shot and fall down and get back up. And it's an interactive haunted house experience. So that one's really cool, too. And that tours throughout the country and stops at 13th Floor Chicago once on its tour.
13thfloorchicago.com is the website. It's the 13th Floor Haunted House. It's their sixth year. They are located in Melrose Park. They're actually not that hard to find. What's the main street there? Was that
right off of North Avenue?
Right off of North Avenue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right off of North Avenue.
George Street. Yep.
And we've got a couple of family four packs to give away if you are interested. 312. I hope that's not the fire alarm. I hope it's just somebody's watch. 312-981-7200 if you want to go to the 13th Floor Haunted House. Got a couple of family four packs to give away, so give us a call if you're interested. When we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about the type of person that comes to this haunted house. Sure. And a little bit more about the experience that they're going to get when they get there. Erica Daybook is the GM of the 13th Floor. Danny is the wardrobe manager. I don't work there. My name is Ken Smith. I work here at 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Ken Smith with you. Just want to let you know that the National Weather Service has issued a flash flood warning for Cook County starting right now and going until 4:46 in the morning. A flash flood warning issued by the National Weather Service for Cook County until 4:46 in the morning as the rain continues to fall. Ken Smith here on 720 WGN. I'm here with Erica Daybook. She's the GM of the 13th Floor Haunted House. It's in Melrose Park. And Danny is the wardrobe manager. And Lorena is in Plainfield. Lorena, welcome to
720.
Hi. Welcome to 720 WGN. You like haunted houses?
I do. My kids actually love them more. I have a 21-year-old, a 19-year-old, and a 13-year-old.
Wow.
Perfect.
So I tell you what, I've got a family four-pack for you guys to go to the 13th floor. Would you like that?
Oh, that would be great. I would love to surprise them with that.
Awesome. Well, hold on, and I'll get that to you. Thanks for listening to 720
Thank
WGN.
You so much.
And let us know how it goes, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lorena. So she sounded very excited. She's very excited for her kids to go. What kind of person goes to a haunted house?
So a lot of people like Lorena. A lot of families go. We recommend kids 12 and up, but you know your kids.
That's a great point. So you're saying if your kid's under 12, well, probably not, but you can judge by, right.
You know your kid.
So some kids are brats. They can handle it.
I mean, we've seen 5-year-olds walk in there like...
Really?
Like,
now, come on. When you see somebody walks in with a 5-year-old, you've got to look at each other and go, bad parent.
No. I mean...
Really?
I'm a horror freak, and so is Danny, so I respect it. I mean, if you know that your kid isn't going to have a bad time, and they're not. You know, if there's a 5-year-old there, they're typically laughing, having fun. Their parents know that their kid's just into it. So we don't recommend, obviously. We say 12 and up. But, again, if you know that your kid can handle it, I've seen 5-year-old kids leave laughing and having a good time. I've seen grown men leave crying.
You know? That's it. That's interesting. So, I'm a laugher.
Okay, I'm the same way.
And I don't know if I'm a laugher because I'm just trying to mask that I'm scared.
Okay.
Or if I'm a laugher because I'm getting a kick out of the way my wife or my friends or the people around me are, you know, reacting to everything.
Sure. It's probably a little bit of both.
Probably a little bit of both. I'm usually not one that's jumping around and screaming, but I'm a laugher. And the thing is that I noticed that, first of all, the experience begins even before you get into the haunted house. Is that correct?
Oh, definitely. So we accomplish that by having line actors. And these line actors are...
What do you mean line actors?
So they are actors that interact with the line outside.
Okay, so they don't have lines of dialogue.
No,
but
they do.
Okay, but they're interacting with you while you're in the line waiting to get in?
Exactly.
Okay.
It helps make the line feel a little shorter because our lines can get pretty long. We do offer fast pass and skip the line to accommodate people that don't want to wait in line, but the line entertainment's there to keep them entertained before they even get in and to give them a little taste of what's to come. So those actors are hand selected. It's a privileged role, and they're out there entertaining, making them laugh, making them cry, whatever it takes to keep them excited, entertained, ready to go inside.
It's got to be a very specialized skill because I'm sure that they're not allowed to touch you or anything like that. But they sure as heck will follow you around.
Sure.
I mean, it is creepy. I don't want to give it away. I don't want to ruin the surprise. But it is very interactive.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for not giving away the surprise or...
No, for complimenting.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
It is. And that's what they're there for. That's why we select those specific actors to take on that role. It's a lot of improv, thinking on your feet. Also reading a crowd. You know, they have to be very aware of this person's too scared. We don't want anyone to leave, like, not go in the show. We want them to go in. So if an icon actor, and actually when Danny's acting, she's really good at this, is getting that scared person to come inside the show. We don't want to scare you away. And so that's the job of a line actor, is to really read the crowd and say, this person's too scared, I'm going to back off. Or like Danny does, I'm going to get a little silly and I'm going to get them in this show right now.
Okay.
Or the person that is acting not scared because they're a big shot, get them.
Right,
and they know
right.
to get that
okay,
person.
Right, okay.
So they're trained to, again, read the crowd. Don't we teach them, don't always go after the most scared person. Challenge yourself. Go after the guy who's trying not to be scared. Go after the girl who's trying not to be scared. And also, a big thing we teach is don't assume that the small girl is going to be the most scared. That's more often than not.
Not the case.
It's her boyfriend that's more scared. So we want our actors, again, to read that situation, and that's why we make a big deal out of choosing those line actors so they can get the crowd going before they go in. It's a big job.
And another thing that I noticed is that there seems that there needs to be impeccable timing here.
Yeah.
Because you have groups of, I don't know, what if it's four or six or eight that
sure.
go in. And there's a certain amount of pacing between each group so that the group behind doesn't see what's happening to the group ahead.
Yep.
And tell me a little bit about that.
So on the outside of the actual show, we control it by, you know, a pacemaker. We set the pace, and we try to keep that going all night. So whether it be 30 seconds between groups, a minute between groups, we try to make sure that pace is going to keep our actors going, because again, if they get hit after group after group after group, that's going to wear them out. So it's for them as well as for the customer experience. And we also train our actors then on how to handle multiple groups coming through, how to slow certain groups down. So we do have actors that are in the show that are looking for groups that are moving too slow to help push them along. Scare them forward, we say. Or there's also groups that are moving too fast. We have actors that are going to slow that group down to try to keep those groups separated. It's definitely a tricky balancing act.
How many, for lack of a better word, scares are there?
Oh, goodness.
As you go through it, and how long of an experience is it from beginning to end? From actually, when you get into the haunted house to when you're finally done with the second haunted house, how long of an experience have you had?
Sure. Anywhere from 20, 25, 30 minutes. Again, if you're...
It's a good long time.
It's a decent amount of time. In terms of the amount of scares, Danny, what do you think? How many scares are in that place? I mean, there's just so many.
You started saying that, and I started thinking of every place I could scare in the haunt. There's at least... There's something happening in every room you walk through.
There's something.
So, that's all we're going to say.
Okay. There's something happening in every. And, you said that it's best for kids 12 or over, but you can gauge it. Any physical restrictions that you would worry about?
Yeah. There's strobe lights in there. There's it's a tense environment. So, again, if you have a health issue that a strobe might affect your well-being, or dark enclosed spaces aren't your thing, or again, if you have a heart condition, I mean, we just want.
Well, that kind of goes without saying, right? Maybe you shouldn't be going to a haunted house.
We make sure
Bernie Sanders. Maybe you want to skip the haunted house this year.
Right. But other than that, as long as, you know, you're an able-bodied being, there should be no problem. We also have wheelchair access, so we have lots of customers come.
Oh, wow.
Wheelchairs. Oh, yeah. So we have a plan for that to make sure they can get through the haunted house safely. So there's very few restrictions unless it's a serious health issue, or we don't necessarily recommend women at a certain point in their pregnancy to enter. But other than that, it's open to everybody.
Open to everybody.
Brave enough.
It is the 13th Floor Haunted House, 13thfloorchicago.com. It is located at 1940 George Street in Melrose Park. And they've already begun, folks. They started in September.
Yep.
They will be open tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. All weekend.
And through the weekend and all weekend and even into November as well. So if you want to check it out, want more information, 13thfloorchicago.com. Thank you so much to Erica and to Danny for coming in and talking to us about it today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you for listening. Busy, busy show. Thanks to the 13th Floor. Thanks to Katie Darrell from Access TV. Thanks to Steve Lupino, the lead investigator on this Marnie Yang case. And thanks to Dispensary 33 and Dispensary33.com for coming in and giving us a little tutorial about what's going to happen on January 1st when the marijuana becomes recreational. Mike, producer Mike, thank you.